So here we are, at long last. After 4 weeks of study, we have arrived here at the end, the fourth and final chapter of the book of Ruth. And it's quite an ending we have. It's a fairy tale ending, I think we could say. Ruth and Boaz get hitched. They have a son. Naomi has a handsome and rich son-in-law now who can support her in her old age. Everybody's happy. Everything worked out for the best. But I wonder if you've noticed over these past 4 weeks as we've been venturing through the book of Ruth, as we've been working our way towards this fairy tale ending, I wonder if you noticed that Ruth, the book of Ruth, is different from almost any other book in the Bible. Have you noticed that at all? Anybody? Because up until today, God has not been one of the characters in the story. There have been two separate times we heard people say, oh, God is doing this or God is doing that. But that was just secondhand reporting. If this were a court of law, that would be deemed hearsay and wouldn't be admissible as evidence. Now, up until today, it has been our job to look at the plot lines of the book of Ruth and to the best of our ability to discern in those plot lines what God is up to. But finally, here in chapter 4, the last chapter of Ruth, God finally, at last, makes an appearance. And specifically in verse 13, we're told that it is God who enables Ruth and Boaz to have a son that they name Obed, a son whose lineage would carry on several generations later to include the famous King David, whose lineage in turn would carry on in several generations to include a guy named Jesus. Maybe you've heard of him. But in any case, up until now, the author has made no definitive statement about how God has been working in the lives of Ruth and Naomi. I think it should be noted that it's not until after they've made it all the way through their trials and tribulations, and there has been a lot of them, including but not limited to a famine, immigration, the death of husbands, and in the case of Naomi, her sons, another round of immigration, and then for a period living in abject poverty. So it should be noted that it's not until Ruth and Naomi have made their way through these trials and tribulations, until they're on the other side of these hardships, it's then and only then that they're able to clearly see what God is doing in their lives. I'm wondering if that is something that you can relate to, because it's certainly something that I feel that I can relate to. Because in the present moment, when you're going through your present struggles and hardships and difficulties, it is really hard to see, to feel, to understand what God is doing in your life, if God is doing anything at all, in fact. And it's not until you're through those hardships and you're looking back in retrospect, only then can you easily and clearly discern God's presence and purpose in all that. It's only in retrospect that you get that aha moment, where you can look back and you can see how all these puzzle pieces of the difficulties and hardships and this crazy journey you were on, how it all came together to bring you to this current moment. Only looking back can you see that. So by way of illustration, I want to share with you the life story of an Anglican priest who was alive in the 1700s. I'm going to tell you about his life story, and you're probably not going to believe that it's true because it's so wild. But I assure you, this is factual information that I'm sharing with you this morning. So this Anglican priest, he was born in 1725. Then at the age of 7, his mother passed away from tuberculosis. His father was a sea captain, so he took the boy with him to start serving on the merchant ships that he commanded. And as you might be able to imagine, life growing up on a ship surrounded by sailors, that was a pretty rough upbringing. In fact, this young man developed a nasty drinking habit before he was even a teenager. And it stuck with him through his entire life, such that he was unable to hold a steady employment for any length of time. When he was about 17 years old, he actually had a position in the Royal Navy. He had enough of it, so he tried to desert. But he was caught, and he was flogged. And he was actually turned over as kind of an indentured servant to a West African slaver who took him to live with him down in West Africa and treated him so, so cruelly. He was forced to wear rags, and for food he actually had to go out and beg on the streets. But his fortune seemed to be turning around when a man sent by his father to search for him located him in West Africa, bought his freedom from this slaver, and they were headed back to England on a vessel known as the Greyhound. But when they were almost back, a storm hit and sunk the ship. You can't make this stuff up. Sunk the ship. And he just narrowly escaped with his life. But he made it back to England, and for the next 3 years, he served as the captain of several slave ships himself. And during that period, one time he fell overboard. He fell right off the ship. And he was so hated by his crew that rather than throwing him a rope, you know what they did? They actually took a spear, they harpooned him in the hip, and then pulled him back on board. And for the rest of his life, he actually walked with a limp because of it. But then he got back on land, and it was not, as you would hope, common sense, but rather it was a stroke. He had a stroke. And that's what caused him to give up his seafaring life for good. But it was on dry land that he had this powerful religious conversion, and he was able to just turn his life around completely. He started studying Greek and Hebrew, and he eventually became a pastor and went on to become the pastor of several really prestigious churches in England. And although he could not articulate where God was in his life at the age of 7 when his mother died of tuberculosis, or when he was an indentured servant to a slaver in West Africa, so many years later, when he was sitting in the study of his little parsonage, reflecting on his life and where God had been in it all, he wrote this about where God was, and maybe this will sound familiar to you. He wrote, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see." And I think the point that really gets home is when he says, "Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Twas grace that brought me safe thus far, and 'tis grace will lead me home." Friends, the Christian faith is, I think, at the end of the day, it's not about believing X, Y, and Z about who Jesus is, about who God is. But I think at the end of the day, it's about trusting, really trusting that even though we can't see it in this moment, in our present difficulty, trusting that God is real and active in our lives. Trusting that even though we can't see it in this moment, that it is God's grace that has brought us safe thus far. And that it is God's grace that will lead us home. Amen.